Everybody, and welcome to minute 104 of season 5 of Movie Rob Minute, the daily podcast where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1990 Bruce Willis action flick Die Hard 2, Die Harder, 1 minute at a time. And not only is today the 104th episode of Die Hard 2, this is actually also my 600th episode of my entire series. You know, so from all the movies that I've done so far, today we've hit the 600 episode mark. So wow, I'm just amazed at that in just a little over 2 years I got the 600 episodes. So that's wow.
Congratulations, you have my pride, my admiration,
and a kick-ass vacation.
That's right,
and it's good for our way of life, right? You know, whether we're a democracy or not. So I'm Rob, and joining me today, once again, is Travis Bow of the Watchmen Minute. Welcome back, Travis.
Thank you.
And happy 600th to you.
I almost said welcome. I almost welcomed you back. That's why I was a little like, thank you.
you were waiting to welcome me. That's okay, too. That's perfectly all right. So minute 104 begins with Khan making the rounds in the cabin and ends with John seeking a solution. So we ended things yesterday with all of the guys in blue light and the three remaining guys from Stewart's Men climbing up into the airplane, into their cargo plane that they've commandeered or been given, however you want to look at it. And Khan started walking, you know, from the cockpit into the cabin itself. And this minute continues with him walking. You know, and we had him yelling yesterday, okay, woohoo, here we go. And then everyone starts high-fiving each other, and they're all really excited. Mm-hmm. Maybe Khan is really excited because, like, he and Miller were the ones who actually survived. You know, I don't know.
Right.
And it's very funny because, like, you see all of the blue light guys are wearing either their white snow suits or they're in camouflage. But both Khan and Miller are the two guys that are dressed differently because of what they had to do.
Yeah, that took me earlier when you were saying that there were only three remaining. I thought, but that doesn't make sense because the passenger area here, I remembered seeing, you know, some guys in white and a bunch of guys in camo. And I thought, you know, then not realizing that, okay, the guys in camo have like white pants on. They've just taken off the outer layer. So yeah.
Right. Well, cause it's pretty hot on the plane, I guess.
Yeah.
It's going to get a little hotter. Yeah. And I think next week or maybe in 2 weeks, it gets a little bit hotter for them possibly, you know, and I love how they're like, they're lighting up cigars. They're high-fiving each other.
They're having fun,
you know, but once again, we still see a few of the guns that have red tape on them, which shows it, you know, kudos to the person in charge of continuity, making sure that they didn't forget that, you know. I mean, these guys are all really, really happy that they're, you know, that they're all going to be quite rich very shortly.
Yeah.
Or at least that's what they think at this point. You know, they're clapping
this,
and they're
this is,
cheering.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're a pretty rowdy crowd, I guess you could say.
Right. This is where I looked up Tom Verica, see who was playing, you know.
Okay.
Again, like I said, you know, I recognized him. I knew I've seen him in other things, so I looked him up to see who he was, and yeah, I've found, you know, he's been in tons of stuff, but he's also like a big producer, involved in a lot of the Shondaland productions, which is actually where I probably know him from the most. He was on at least the first season of How to Get Away with Murder. He was the husband to blanking on her name now.
I've Amanda actually Waller never seen I've never Suicide seen any Squad. Any episodes of that show.
Okay. Man, what is her name? Now that's bugging me. She plays Amanda Waller.
It's not Regina King, Suicide right? Squad.
No, it's man, it's gonna bug me. But regardless, he's the husband in that show. I forget if he goes on to the second season or anything, but
Viola Davis, right? Are
you talking Viola Davis? Viola Davis. Thank you.
There you go. Right.
Yeah, I guess he did a long stint on The Naked Truth with Taya Leone.
Oh, really? I love that show. That was a great show.
Yeah, he was. I flipped through the photos in IMDb just to look at his images, and it looked like he was probably the male lead in that show.
Really? Wow. I don't remember
that at all.
That's
what it looked like. I mean, he looked like he was in a bunch of episodes. I think
he was in 22 episodes of the 55.
Oh,
they had 55 episodes. Okay. So he played a character named Jake Sullivan. So maybe on one of the seasons,
Jake Sully.
That's right. So maybe on one of the seasons he was the love interest or something like that. Maybe that's what it was.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he was in the TV show American Dreams. He was on 61 episodes. So that How to Get Away with Murder, he was in 23 episodes, as you mentioned. But most of the stuff he's been on like just one episode, or he was in Zodiac. He had a role in Zodiac. He was in Flags of Our Fathers. Forgot about that one.
Okay.
Playing one of the characters there also. Yeah, and as I mentioned earlier this week, he was in From the Earth to the Moon. So yeah, no, he's definitely got a lot of credits. He's got 61 credits in IMDb. So I'm sure you can find him here or there, the different things that he's done. So yeah, those are pretty much the big ones that he was on 9 episodes of LA Law.
Okay,
that was probably very early in his career. That he was there. Actually, that's around this time. That's actually really funny that I think about that, because he was on LA Law in 1991. So it was actually a year after he was on this film. So basically, at this point, these guys are getting really, really cocky, and they're cheering and clapping and stuff like that. And then we go into the cockpit and we see Esperanza is piloting with Stewart as the co-pilot. And then we see some other guy, that Grant is just sitting in the back, but there's like another guy who's supposedly the navigator. Who
I think it's Von D. Curtis Hall.
You're right. You are right. It is. It's Von D. Curtis Hall. There you go. So in other words, Khan is the only guy who doesn't have a real job.
Yeah.
He's the morale officer?
Right. He opened the door the last minute. And now his watch has ended.
That's right.
Now he just gets to go party in the back with the guys. I'm surprised there's not a case of beer on the plane. I'm really surprised that they're not celebrating a little bit more with these guys in the back.
Well, where would they have gotten the case of beer? That's the first question.
I don't know.
And now I have an even bigger question. If you look at it, it looks pretty much as if the seats are almost entirely filled. Where would the other 9 guys have sat?
Crisscross applesauce on the floor.
That's right.
This is when
they never.
This
asked.
Is when I basically figured out that this was a cargo plane, because I noticed that in this passenger section, it basically there's a wall back there, not too far behind where these guys are sitting. So. Then it was like, oh, okay, this is not a, typical passenger plane. So
it's actually interesting to think about it. They're like, because they never said we want a cargo plane with room for 25 people.
Right.
It's like they would have given that away. Maybe they knew that in a cargo plane there are enough seats in general. I don't know.
Yeah.
But whatever. That goes back to what we were talking about a few weeks ago with the. With the snow, what were they called? Not snow speeders.
snowmobiles,
right? With the snowmobiles. So they only had 5 snowmobiles, but they were supposed to be 12 guys, 13. So how would they have done that? That's something we discussed. That there, it doesn't make sense, but. You can't really think of a plausible explanation unless that was only a backup plan,
Right.
So, I don't know.
Yeah, I'm thinking Stewart probably expected some casualties along the way. Obviously, he couldn't. No one can expect, John McClane to ruin your plan.
The truth is, I don't agree with you on that. I don't think he expected any casualties, because he's overconfident already from the beginning. And when Miller comes back and he says losing one of our men wasn't part of the plan, so he wasn't
Not,
expecting it.
yeah, not, not part of the plan, but because he has so many men and he doesn't seem too upset when any of them get picked off, you know, I think he's not upset that you know,
No, he
he
doesn't.
lost
He
some men,
hasn't
I
shed
guess.
any tears for any of them, except
Yeah.
for Cochran, who he almost killed Miller because of that. That is it, So,
Yeah.
yeah. So we're in the cockpit, and then Grant says, "I don't know about you guys, but I've seen enough f-ing snow to last me a lifetime." Then Stewart turns to him and goes, "They don't get much of that in the tropics, Major." And then Esperanza laughs and goes, "For you, gentlemen, we'll import it." And they all start laughing.
Yeah.
At least they have what to chuckle about.
I looked into places that the major could go
Ooh.
if he doesn't want to ever see snow again.
All right. What have you got?
Number f so there's four here. He could go to Fiji, the tropical island nation which sits in the South Pacific Ocean and boasts tropical temperatures year round, has never seen snow.
Wow.
He could go to New Delhi, India. Not only do temperatures in India's capital city rarely dip below 32 degrees Fahrenheit freezing mark, but winter there is considered to be a dry season.
Ooh.
While Delhi has yet to experience no snowfall, it does, however, see frost from time to time. Number two, Cairo, Egypt. With its desert climate, precipitation of any kind is a rarity in Cairo. It averages less than 1 inch of rainfall each year. There was a near snowfall in December 2013, but the tiny white precipitation turned out to be soft hail, not snow.
There's been hail in Egypt before, if you read
That's
your
right.
Bible.
And number one, maybe the best place for the major to go, would be the dry valleys of Antarctica. Surprisingly, one of the coldest continents, Antarctica, is also home to a place that's never seen snow, known as the Dry Valleys. The region is one of the driest places on Earth and hasn't seen rainfall for an estimated 2 million years.
No, okay. Yeah, only 2 million.
Two things,
There
two things keep it dry. First, the mountains are so high that they block any moisture from the nearby East Antarctic ice sheet. And secondly, as cold, heavy air is pulled down the mountain slopes by gravity, high speed or katabatic winds heat the air, immediately evaporating whatever water may be in it. So there you go. Those are four places that the major could visit.
Oh wow. Interesting. Very cool. I wonder if the cargo plane will actually reach those destinations.
Yeah.
We'll get there. We'll get there. There is something in today that the, today's minute we'll talk a little bit about it.
Yeah.
And then basically the shot changes and we see the helicopter on the outside again. And then we go into the helicopter and John screams, "They left the hangar." And then Sam is still directing the cameraman, goes, right there, get that." Like, what does she want him to film? The airplane?
Yeah, I guess just the bad guys are escaping, and I mean,
No, it's just
better than
funny.
shooting nothing.
That's right. It's just funny the way that she says it,
Yeah.
And then all right, then the pilot turns to John and goes, "All right, now what?" And he goes, "Get in front of them, take them down." Yeah, really smart, John. Block their path so they can't get out of there. And then the guy goes, "I'm not playing chicken with a 200 ton plane. I'm crazy, but I ain't that crazy. Forget it."
I'm with John here. I think anyone piloting a plane, you know, they have to take off or they have to stop. They can't keep going forward forever. They're going to run out of runway. And I don't think any pilot, even maybe the general, maybe he's desperate enough, but I don't think a pilot of one of these planes is going to risk lifting off anyways and hitting this helicopter and potentially, you know, cracking his, you know, windscreen or taking on any damage like that.
Okay, but the,
you know,
the
I think is, I think you could.
The, it, what's that? But it is playing chicken. There's no question.
It
about
is
that.
Sure, but I think this is one of those that no matter what you're in, you've got an advantage if you're going up against a, you know, if it was a car, yeah, they could probably just drive over it. Although that might be enough to disable, the wheels or whatever. But yeah, I don't know. I'm with John here.
All right, that's fair. But I think the pilot is a little more experienced.
Yeah.
No
yeah.
offense to you, Travis.
And he is accurate, or he's in the ballpark when he says 200 tons.
Yeah, we'll get there. We'll get there in a second.
Okay.
First, I want to talk about the chicken. He says, I want to play chicken. So do you know any other names for the game of chicken?
I mean, it's kind of jousting, isn't it?
Sort of. No, it is sort really. Of. We did talk about jousting a few weeks ago. But so first of all, it's known as the Hawk Dove game or the Snowdrift game. And it is a model of conflict for two players in game theory. The principle of the game is that while the ideal outcome is for one player to yield to avoid the worst outcome if neither yields, the individuals try to avoid it out of pride for not wanting to look like a chicken. Each player taunts the other to increase the risk of shame in yielding. However, when one player yields, the conflict is avoided and the game is for the most part over. So it's basically just a fight for egos as to who's, yeah. You know, the movie I always think of when I think of the game of chicken is Footloose. You know, when they were right. playing with the tractors, you know, and Ren wants to jump off, but his shoelace gets stuck and isn't able to do it. So, you know, and I mean, this is just, you know, it's the article that I found talks about like all of the economic aspects of it, which we're not really going to get into about where it all comes from. You know, it's not the type of chicken that we would normally think where people are, okay. you know, one, it's more, you know, theory, economic theories and stuff like that about how things, you know, maybe in business strategy and stuff like that.
Okay. Right.
But yeah. We're not going to get into that. I mean, we're more familiar with the idea of who's going to blink first, you know, that type of thing.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it works really well for him to use that as the example here, because that's more or less what he would be doing. It's playing chicken. It's the idea of trying to keep them on the ground, as you said before, but I don't know how much it's really whether it would really work or not.
Yeah.
Right. So back to what you were saying about the weight of the cargo plane. So basically I found a place that talks about the three different general sizes of cargo aircraft. You have, you know, small, medium, and large, and also talks about the you know, how heavy they are and also their range, because the range is something we talked about a little bit earlier about how important that is, about, you know, whether they can make it to Fiji or Egypt or New Delhi. I'm trying to remember what the fourth one was that you mentioned.
Antarctica.
Right, exactly.
Which I can actually tell you it in an episode of Watchmen Minute that we did. They go to Antarctica, actually.
Yes,
they
of course.
Fly the owl, the owl jet, or the owl to Antarctica. And I found, you know, I forget how I looked it up, but it would take 180,000 gallons of fuel.
Whoa.
To fly from New York to Antarctica. So
right.
That actually might help here in some
way. No, probably not. I don't.
It's a cargo plane. Maybe they have room for a bunch of barrels.
Yeah, I think the owl is a little smaller and probably more gas efficient.
Yeah.
You know, it's fuel efficient.
They're not using,
So a small cargo aircraft is usually anywhere between 1 to 10 tons. And the range is only about 4 hours, that you can only fly about 4 hours. Again, these are generalizations. Obviously, there are planes apparently that don't fit specifically into this. A medium cargo plane is anywhere between 12 and a half tons to 40 tons. And that can usually fly up to 8 hours. And then the large cargo planes, which I believe is what they've asked for here, because I think they said they wanted a 747 or 767. Both of those fit into here as the large cargo aircraft. They're anywhere between 40 and 250 tons. So I guess you sort of can make sense that it could be a 200 ton plane. And they can usually only fly up to about 12 hours. So, I mean, I can tell you that the flight from New York to Israel or Israel to New York is anywhere between 10 and 12 hours, depending on wind speed and stuff like that, or headwinds and stuff like that. But so maybe Cairo is the only place that they can get to. And if they're saying tropics, I don't think they're really referring to Cairo. When you would say tropics, my assumption is they're going somewhere in Central America. You know, some island in Central, or which is ironic because that's actually where Esperanza is coming from. You know, Verde is in Central America somewhere. You know, we're not sure exactly where, but who knows? Was there something else you wanted to add about the cargo plane that you were talking about before?
I just did, how heavy is a, how much does a, I use Boeing 747 as my, what I assume this plane to be. Said a Boeing 747 aircraft weighs anywhere between 153 tons and 220 tons.
So the
So
pilot's
yeah, it's
right.
in the range there.
The pilot rounded off well. Yeah. And
And it does say that its maximum takeoff weight is between 320 tons and almost 450
wow, so
tons.
you can get
So,
another 200 tons on there. That's just amazing. Wow.
yeah.
Wow, that's really cool. And then as we're in the helicopter and we start hearing the pilot from the Northeast flight. Now, my first question here is why are they on that frequency? You know, it just so happens that they're on the same frequency. So basically we hear the pilot say, Dulles, this is Northeast 140. Request clearance on first available runway. And John goes, hey, that's Holly's plane. Repeat, request emergency clearance. I know you're not going to answer, but you damn well better listen. We're down to fumes and we have to land. And in 5 minutes, we're coming in one way or another. And then John screams at the pilot, God damn it, that's my wife's plane. Take it fucking down. He goes, I'm not getting in front of the plane. We see that there's all this tension going on in the helicopter itself, you know, between them. And we get a shot of Trudeau also listening in, hearing, you know, the report. But obviously he has no way of responding to them. You know, and then John looks around to see if he can find some sort of answer of how to deal with it or whatever it is.
I really like the determination from this pilot. He knows he's not supposed to land, but they're going to crash if he doesn't do something. So I've and yeah, I like that he's just matter of fact, like, we're coming in.
Let's hope.
Sorry.
That's right.
And you've probably talked about this, but I mean, if you haven't, what do you th think about the overall plan here of Stewart's? It's kind of ingenious because he's essentially he's hijacking all of these planes without having to set foot on the planes themselves.
Correct.
By taking over this airport, controlling the airport, it's really a brilliant kind of way to go about this. I mean, and I'm glad they did it in this way. It's not another, it's not Passenger 57, it's not, Die Hard in the Sky. It's a little different.
Right.
And I think there have been other movies to kind of do that. So I think this is an interesting way to use these planes as, as the to increase the
Yes,
stakes.
I agree with you on it. I mean, again, we've pointed out numerous times that there's a huge plot hole here because they should have diverted the planes right away. as soon as when they had those 2 minutes that they could divert them. That's one thing. And the second thing is my assumption is that the airplanes have some sort of protocol that if the airport that you're not if the airport that you're supposed to be going to is not responding in X amount of time, then you get in touch with a different airport to go land. But okay, that would have, taken away some of the fun of the movie if they would have done something like that. So.
Yeah, it only works because the weather is supposed to be so bad that they're actually sending more planes to
Correct.
Dulles, right?
Yes.
Like the surrounding airport. So it only works because the weather is so
That's right.
bad. You know, if conditions were better, yeah, the planes would just go to New York, JFK,
No, but they've been
wherever.
circling around for
You
2 hours. I mean, they could have gotten very far.
Right.
They could have gotten all the way out to Indianapolis. I mean, come on. It's like So, you have anything else you want to say about this movie before we get into the script?
What do I have? We briefly saw, Sam Coleman. She's in the plane there. And I just wanted to point out that Sheila McCarthy is great as Sam here. She does a fine job, but she's also great in the season one of Umbrella Academy.
Okay. I've never seen that. I've seen her in a few things,
It's
but I've never seen her in that. This, you know, so yeah. She's very recognizable though in different when you see her in movies. Maybe it's because I like this movie so much that I find her recognizable. That I don't know. All right, very cool. So the script starts off with in the hangar at night, the abandoned truck's lights still glare into the camera, and then something shadows them. The 747 taxis out of the hangar, rolls towards the runway. Inside the first class area, the soldiers take seats, cocky smiles on their faces. The chopper, McLean and the others fly along, listening to the continued airplane and tower traffic, which is growing panicky. Pilot points and goes, Hangar 11. McLean goes, They're leaving. In the hangar below them, the plane is in a slow wide turn, the hangar empty, lights spilling into the snow. Sam taps the cameraman, who's already on the case. Now what? Get him to stop. Hover low. Block their path. Play chicken with a 200-ton plane? Hey, I'm crazy, but I'm not that crazy. And then we hear on the radio, Dulles, this is Western 140. Holly, request clearance on first available runway. Repeat, request emergency clearance. And then it says Trudeau's voice, -114. Our situation is unchanged. How the hell did he was he able to respond? That's a slight error in the in the script here that they actually have Trudeau responding. Well, mine just changed. God damn it. We're down to fumes and we have to land. In 5 minutes, we're coming in one way or another. McLean turns to the pilot. That's my wife's plane, god damn it. Pilot goes, I'm still not getting in front of it. And that's pretty much how it ends. So every Thursday, we have a segment called Aviation Thursday, where my guests will give their top five movies related to aviation, whether it's airplanes, airports, space flight, could be anything. So, what have you got for us, Travis? Start with your number five and work your way up.
Okay. Number five, I'll go with Red Tails, the movie about the Tuskegee Airmen. It's just a
You said
solid
George
movie
Lucas.
that, a story that, and then I'll say on the other side of the world, same time period, I actually like a lot of Pearl Harbor. Not seen it in a long time, but I remember really liking, I know it's full of like Michael Bay tropes, galore. It's that sort of filmmaking, but I think the plane stuff that they do in that movie is really good with what Josh Hartnett and Ben Affleck are doing. And then like post Pearl Harbor attack, when they're all gearing up to launch an attack against
The
Japan, they're like trying to
Doolittle
figure
raid.
out how to. Yeah, the Doolittle raid. Yeah, that sequence is really, really, I think, well done. What else? Then I'll go with Up in the Air, the George Clooney, kind of Anna Kendrick, Vera Farmiga movie about like just business, and one little aspect of it is, just a lot of air travel, and George Clooney is trying to get to like a million you know, frequent flyer miles or whatever. But it's a good sort. It's a good movie. Then of course, Con Air. It's just, you know, it's great. It's Con Air. And then Die Hard, Top Gun. It's, you know, it's the movie I think of when you think of airplanes and,
Oh, very cool. Great choices there. Shout out to Jay and Mark, previously of the Con Air pod, which they've already finished. They finished back in the summer, but you can still go there and listen to all the episodes of the Con Air podcast there, where they do it scene by scene, or actually chapter by chapter. They don't even, you know,
Okay.
So, yeah. All right. So, Travis, you want to once again tell people where they can find Travis Bow?
Sure. Yeah, Real Comic Heroes. We talk about comic book movies. And yeah, I think you'll enjoy it. So check out Real Comic Heroes, Real with two E's.
All right. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Around Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on my website, movieroundminute.com, or you can find me on Twitter. So until tomorrow, yippee-ki-yay!
Yippee-ki-yay!
If you're fond of sand dunes and salty air, quaint little villages here and there,